been better if you'd had the lyrics ready.
Hey, look, you know, we're turning over the page, man. You know, we're moving into 2026, and we got to, you know, we've got some improvement to do. We're working on it.
We're going to make some changes.
Yeah.
We're going to let the computers take over.
We're also bringing on some talent.
Yeah.
You know.
We actually have some help.
Yep.
It's no longer just Tato behind the scenes. Now we got Rick in the mix. And
maybe get a couple interns.
Yes.
You know? to do all that stuff that you and I don't want to do.
So what episode are we on? This will be the final one that we're going to start, that we're going to name athletes.
Yeah.
Out of that.
I know. This offensive line sort of doldrum has really bored even the hosts of the show.
I mean, so the 80s would be good. But.
Look, the two listeners have got to be bored with this shit by now. So, look, out with the old, in with the new. So, but hey, one thing remains the same. Comer Distributing has been a staunch supporter of the show. Yeah. Thank you, Chip and his team for supplying the tasty beverages each week, all that and then some. This week, the last beer of 2025 is Holy City Pluff Mud Porter. It's a good one, man.
It's pretty good, yeah.
Darker beer. I know it's a
not a pretty can.
It is a
good beer.
Well, you know, sometimes the good can, you know, shit beer.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of wondering. Like,
right.
I mean, but, I know it's Pluff Mud, but you know.
But yeah, it's a porter. Darker beer. A lot different than your top Bud Light. But, you know, your palate's sort of getting a little more culture.
It is.
Just by doing the show, you know?
I drank a Guinness last week.
Say it ain't so.
Yes.
Yeah, did you like it?
But it was free with the hotel stay, so. It was good enough. If it's free, it's for me.
Oh, my God. almost spit my beer out. Sorry, guys. All right, well, hell, man. Last show of 2025, we're going to try to do some program format, right?
Yeah.
Trying to have some structure to the show. Want to talk to the two listeners. Pre-file deadline was December 16th, so a week or so ago.
How many pages?
95 pages of pre-file, so that's 95 pages of bill summaries, folks. So
that's 95 pages I didn't read. I'm not going through all of those pre-files. There's so many that are just BS that people just put up there just to make their constituents happy.
It does provide for good content for a show.
Well, I mean, if it's going to get to a committee, then we can really discuss every one of them.
Yeah, so we wanted to talk about some of these pre-files, and we started talking about different ways we could format this to talk about it. We talked, you know, some of us, Brandon, are in the fantasy football finals of their league. Somewhere.
You win so much, they just kick you out, and then you're just kind of stuck.
And so we started thinking about fantasy football draft and all those things. We're like,
now, do you put money on this? I mean, we need to know to let our pastor know.
Yeah, no. This is pride.
Okay.
You know, straight pride. I've been doing this since like the late 90s. So, but no. So we thought pre-files, how can we do that? How can we integrate, say, a fantasy football draft style to some of these pre-files? And you came up with some good ideas.
Yeah. So, I mean, set it up 4 rounds.
Yeah.
And we'll discuss all the bills. I have to reach to the computer to scroll down through all 4 right now.
Yeah. You did not prep.
Prepping is not my thing.
We'll discuss that later.
But yeah, we will get into that. Do you want to go through the week in review first before we even get started?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Well, just preparing for Christmas, man. This is my last official day of work. Actually, I do have one more call tomorrow, but then I'll be done. We are filming, what is this, the 23rd?
Yes.
So 2 days away from Christmas. I've got all my shopping done. We talked about Christmas traditions last episode. I'm surprised most folks don't know about Tiny Desk. I've gotten from the last episode to this, I've had several folks just around town talk to me about, I never even knew about Tiny Desk. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And my wife and I are steadily checking those off. Hey, if you have not seen the Red Clay Strays, Tiny Desk.
I hadn't seen that one.
Go check it out. It's really good. That was one of our favorites of this past week or two.
First time that I'd ever heard Red Clay Strays, Rick and his wife, Bear, invited us to a concert.
Yeah.
And myself and my wife went, and it was, trying to think of the guys, the Drunk on the Plane guy.
That was when Bad Bunny opened up?
No. It was a Dierks Bentley. Dierks Bentley concert. And the first group to open up was Red Clay Strays.
Yeah.
But the guy, Brandon, the lead singer,
yeah.
I mean, he's impossible to miss because he is...
7'2".
He is massive.
Yeah.
And then he's got this Elvis look. And then he kind of sounds a little bit like the Johnny Cash Elvis mix. And it was just like, yeah, wow, this is different. But really like the music. I ended up downloading everything that they had after that. And they became one of my favorite bands. And that was a couple years ago.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So Tiny Desk, Christmas tradition of ours here in the Sessions household. Check it out. Red Clay Strays. Killing it. As far as business, man, just trying to wrap up year-end work. And then I did have a meeting with our HHS director, Eunice Medina, and some of her staff yesterday. Me and another member, Representative Lee Hewitt, he chairs Healthcare Subcommittee for Ways and Means. We went down and just had a Medicaid sort of tutorial. Spent 4 hours with her and her staff just going through how do we fund Medicaid here in our state.
Yeah.
Where does the funding sort of channels come in? There's a lot of federal match. There's a lot of eligibility requirements that are state to state. And so, you know, just trying to understand all that. And then also the big, beautiful bill that got passed. How does that impact our state and how we deliver healthcare to those who, say, are less fortunate, disabled, you know, things of that nature. So,
yeah. So they're working all the way up to the last minute, huh?
Yeah.
I hear
you. How about you?
Well, you know, I went to a cigar bar with a bunch of lobbyists in D.C.
In D.C., please,
and,
yes.
And drank some bourbon, smoked some cigars, did a lot of networking. That was the...
The typical week of Representative Brandon Guffey.
No, that was the fun part. So I went to a cigar bar whenever I was in Fort Worth a couple of weeks ago and met a guy that is a runs campaigns for a living out of D.C., so he was hosting a thank you to vendors and things that he uses there.
As long as he isn't a sitting member of the legislature running campaigns,
there,
I don't have a problem.
Yeah, yeah. There were members that came out there, but I went there for that. That was just one night thing, but it was very fun. And then the family and I, we went. The First Lady's office had reached out and invited us to the White House for White House Christmas tour. So we were able to bring, you know, wife, Callie, Cohen, and Cohen's girlfriend, Taylor, all there. And that was very unique. Ended up costing me a fortune because then my wife wanted every White House decoration.
every Christmas ornament?
Every Christmas ornament, yeah. Which there are 46 of them.
Oh, wow.
Since they have created them. So.
And you may be in Melania Trump documentaries. You may be in some of that B-roll, I guess. Huh? Have you seen the previews of this?
I haven't seen it.
The Melania Trump documentary?
I haven't seen it.
It's coming out. I think MGM produced it. Like, it seems like a big deal. And I was like, wait, what?
So, I'm telling you, she's a force. Like, she's always been under the radar, but
hey,
she is a force.
That's
sort of my
style, man.
She wants it done, she gets it done.
I saw this. Hey, if you haven't seen it, go check it out. You can probably Google it. Melania Trump has a documentary that has been produced by MGM, a big studio, and I think it's being released in January next year.
Hopefully they don't have me complimenting her shoes.
Oh, boy.
Thanks, Trevor.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
but that was pretty much it. And as far as work, I'm trying to finish up the book. Got to be done by the end of the year.
Oh, yeah.
So
right.
I've got about 5 chapters left, and I've got about 8 days to finish.
I tell you, you know, when we first met years ago and, you know, we were talking about both of our initial campaigns for the State House, I never thought I would think a author, book author, would be sort of in your bio. You know, maybe like a comic strip or something. Or I'm just kidding.
If AI can design it for you.
No, but seriously, I we make jokes, man. But I mean, that's just.
Well, I mean, I sent you one chapter to read.
Yeah.
That talks about the Porch Caucus.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. And again, we talk about the rise of the machines.
Yeah.
Speechify, folks.
Yeah.
If you do not have the Speechify app, I strongly recommend. And Speechify, if you want to sponsor the show, get in contact with us. But you want to talk about productivity, man? You throw that chapter, or I throw bills into it.
To read it to.
Jump into the car, and it starts reading. And you can even choose the voice that you want.
Yep.
Mine is Gwyneth Paltrow. It just so happened I liked her voice, and worked out. So anyway, all right, let's get to this.
You got me conscious about myself now. I got some Australian dude talking to me.
Is it a dude?
Yeah, I mean, it's reading. I'm questioning myself here. Hey, 2026. I don't know what's going on here.
Hey, I got a Taylor Swift record you can borrow. All right.
This is what they mean by becoming the swamp.
All right. This episode of Pints of Politics is brought to you by Comer Distributing. Comer Distributing Company is a wholesale beer distributor located in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Founded in 1971, Comer is a family-owned business that distributes beer and other beverages to York, Chester, Fairfield, Lancaster, Kershaw, Lexington, and Richland counties. All right, man. You ready to get this draft started?
I was looking for something a little bit more exciting to kick off the draft, though. You know, considering that's our first thing.
I'm going to let you DJ.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna break the segments up into rounds, and you get round two music, all right?
All right, so I'll do that.
Speaking of fights, man, anybody catch the Jake Paul?
Woo,
my
Lord. I enjoyed the Andrew Tate a whole lot more.
Holy smokes, man. Yeah. And seeing some of his after photos, spending Christmas with a broken jaw.
I mean, that guy looks like he would break you, though.
Yes. And, man, his opponent was 40 pounds heavier than him, had like a 6-8-inch reach over him. I mean, hey, kudos for him even stepping into the ring with a guy that, but yeah, he paid the price, man.
All right, so on the draft.
Yep.
What we're going to do, you're going to pick round one, which will be the main event. Mm-hmm. That is the serious policy of this year. Yeah. We're only talking pre-files. So there's plenty of bills out there. We're just going off of pre-files here.
Okay.
Yeah. Round two will be the fire starter.
All right.
Round three.
Fire starter being like the red meat. Right.
The culture war issue.
Yep, okay, got it.
Round three will be the doomsday prepper. So that's the wild card. Oh, right? We don't know. I mean, will it be? Will chemtrails make it? We don't know. Round four will be the palate cleanser. So that'll be the good one that we can just make everybody feel good about. Yeah.
All right, gotcha.
So right, round one, we're going to let you pick.
As far as serious policy goes, and this has been an issue, I think, that's been a priority. When you and I got in, it's got to be House Bill 4755, which is the judicial merit reform. This was a component, this bill that I think Gil Gatch and our caucus all signed on to is one that fundamentally is going to change how we elect judges here in South Carolina. This was part, a little fun fact, this bill was actually part of the original JMSC reform. When we came in our first term, it just, through the process of going through the House and the Senate and make its way to the governor's desk, it just got,
removed.
Yep, it just got taken
out. Well, once it went to the Senate.
Right. It was one of those things that was probably just a step too far. You know, and a lot of times, folks, you'll see that when legislation's introduced. Initially, any sort of massive reform or change gets an initial stiff arm. You know, it sort of gets the push from folks who, just don't like a whole lot of change very, very fast, right? And when you're talking about writing responsible legislation, you got to be deliberate, right?
Yeah.
So I understand that to a point, but we did pass some form of judicial merit reform in our first term. Hopefully this year.
It just kicks in this year, though.
That's
what blows me away is as we're talking about this, and look, I signed on to the bill as well. Because I don't disagree with it, but we haven't even had a chance to see the merits of what we passed previously.
Yeah.
So all the complaints and like people saying, "Oh, well, yeah, we didn't really pass judicial." No, we passed it. It just only starts. This is the first election with our
this JMSC is the first with the new membership and so forth. But yeah, so this is just a continuing down a path that we've started in our first term. I think the Republican caucus is picking up on that reform And, you know, it's getting a lot of social media attention, too, from Ram Reddy's group.
Yep.
What is that? Doge SC,
the Doge SC. Or SC Doge. I can't.
Yeah,
I
get one of those. But so he's getting it out there. I think the message is getting out there a lot more than, say, in our prior term, right? A lot of folks are understanding what
he's spending more money than we ever spent on
correct
advertising.
Yep. So, but again, this is fundamentally going to change how we elect judges, right? The governor's going to now make the appointments, and that committee is now out of the hands of the legislature, which, you know, some like it, some don't, but the majority of our caucus does. So I'm looking forward to that. So I think that's going to be the serious sort of reform or policy issue that we're going to get done this year.
And honestly, I think most, like, everyone wants to talk about the lawyer lobby or the attorneys that are in the lobby.
Yeah.
I really don't hear too much of them pushing back on it because they almost feel like, you know, JMSC's lost its power anyway. So what does it matter who is appointed to JMSC to do the screening? And I, like I said on an earlier episode this year, I think we set the precedent. If we don't like who gets selected and put out there, we just don't vote for them anyway.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, making that change is important. But, you know, if it's going to restore public trust, I'm all for it. I don't have a problem. It just shifts the politics a little bit more to the governor's office as opposed to into the legislature. But, you know, the DEI component of it.
Right, of going on merit.
Yes.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll throw this question out is, you know, over the recent years with the Murdaugh stuff coming out and all of what that did as far as, do you think that has some impact as far as, you know, that I think that undermined it. It brought transparency and light to a rural part of our state that was run by a powerful law firm.
It showed the good old boys.
Right. And yeah. And so, but is there, does that come into play here? Is that what has gotten sort of popular culture of our state in support of what we think is good policy? They're just thinking, hey, it's sort of common sense. You know what I mean? Does that have a play here?
I think, you know, and let's be honest, I mean, you got to give props to Fitz News for pointing out a lot of these issues.
Yeah.
Where you have judges letting people get off early. I think all of that plays. I mean, look at the, you know, the Steve Federico case.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or, you know, him losing his daughter because this person's let out.
Yeah, and it was a repeat offender. It wasn't like the second time.
I mean, it's showing that that there is a need, and especially if the people that are being let out happen to be represented by lawyer legislators.
Yep.
So if it's going to restore the public trust, I mean, bottom line is we can write the laws all day long. We just need to ensure that they're being enforced, and that takes a different branch of government.
Correct.
And we've got to make sure that, you know, those sentences are being carried out.
Right. And that's
hopefully
a good
this can do this. I think it will be the big debate, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I do, too. And that's a good point, because a lot of times we hear from our constituents and they're like, hey, we got to do this, that, or the other. I'm like, wait a minute. This legislation, this is already a law.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's a lack of enforcement. I mean, because let's be honest. Right now, marijuana, like rolled up in paper and smoke form is illegal in South Carolina.
Yeah.
Hey folks, raise your hand if you've ever walked down Main Street of your hometown and it smells like marijuana.
Right.
You know what I mean? We had a festival here recently where there was a number of us walking to a, you know, I mean, we were dressed up. And there was a guy, I would say in his young mid-20s, literally smoking a blunt right on the street.
I mean, we used to.
And I'm like, man, what the hell?
I mean, we were at least courteous. We would smoke it out of a crushed Coke can or something. Jeez. So just like you were drinking a can afterwards. But,
you know, he can't help himself. So anyway, but yeah, you know, some of my frustration, even being someone who is in our position, I get frustrated with that too, like the lack of enforcement. So
yeah. Well, I mean, we got it all the time. Same thing with speeding. I get people to call me complaining. You know, what are you going to do about these speeders down my road and flying? It's like, we have laws in place.
Right.
This is an enforcement issue. You've got to get law enforcement. Well, they're not doing anything. Well, do you want me to interfere with law enforcement, because that would be part of the good old boy network.
Yeah.
Whether I'm helping somebody out one way or the other, if I'm using my power to, you know, hover over law enforcement, yep, or to hover over the judicial system, it's the good old boy network. It just depends on whether it's for your benefit or not.
Well, and trying to stick to, you know, the script a little bit, don't get me started on slow people in the fast lane. Okay, don't get me started, because driving all over the state the way I do for work and this job and everything else, man, I don't know what it is. But folks, PSA for the holiday season, if you're not passing, go ahead and get over, please.
Yes.
Please, God.
I mean, or you just drive a hippie bus and you can only stay in the slow lane. Not enough ass to pass.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. So this is going to be the fire starter.
Round two.
The culture war.
Good song, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I was going to put a little bit of lyrics, but I figured, you know, I needed to fail as hard as you did at the opening.
The so. Yeah. All right. What you got for the red meat?
The red meat bill is going to be the Student Physical Privacy Act.
Yep.
The boys and girls restroom, which, you know, I often credit you and Wes were the ones that have it in the proviso to begin with. You know, I think our local party doesn't want to give you any credit and gives it all to Wes, but
totally fine. Know,
yeah. Yeah.
He's running for Congress.
That's one of the things that makes you great, though. You don't ever care about credit, but you kind of led that whole scenario to begin with.
Well, I mean, you know, we talk about what inspires us a lot of times and, you know, Gavin and that, all of what happened and what led up to all those tragic events has inspires you to this day, right? And so what this inspired, the reason why I got inspired about this issue was because my daughter was dealing with this in her high school, yeah, right? And it was by accident that I overheard the story. Her and her friends were at the dinner table. We had taken her out for her like 14th birthday. And they were talking about how they cannot use the bathrooms in a certain building of the high school, because there was someone who identified as the opposite sex.
An 18-year-old.
Yep, of their biology. And, you know, I was like, wait, what? And, you know, I wasn't, as a parent of a child, I thought we should have been notified that this potential issue, because that's for me, on a base level, that's a safety issue, right?
Yeah.
Because the way schools are designed, there's one doorway in, and then it's private. Right?
Yeah.
And a lot of things can go on in a school bathroom. And whether it's fights, kids smoking or doing something they shouldn't be doing, or worse, right? And so
I could never fire up a cigarette in the bathroom in high school without getting put in suspension.
Yeah, right. So
I don't know how they knew all that. But.
So yeah. So just think of the fact that my 14, 15-year-old daughter wasn't able to use a designated girl's bathroom because a biological boy was going in there. And she didn't know if he was in there or not when she was in there. It ran against just normal common sense for parents. And so I think, you know, if we are drafting bills that we think are going to get through both chambers, this is an easy one for me. This is common sense. I would say this would go nearly unanimous, right?
I don't know. I mean, that's the reason I thought it was the culture war.
Right. No, I think, don't get me wrong, I think there's going to be 5 or 10 folks who may, but, you know, in a 124-member House, I think that's pretty good, considering. Yeah. But I do think it's common sense. I think everyone agrees that, look, there can be some gender confusion when a kid is 10, 12, whatever, at whatever young age. And we don't want to demagogue that person, that individual. They need to get some support and help, however they can get it. But they don't need to be going into bathrooms where both the opposite sex, so if someone's a biological male who thinks they're a female, they shouldn't be going into a girl's bathroom anyway.
Yeah.
Right? And that's also for their safety as well. And so however our school's got to, I wish it could be handled on a local level, where the school staff and administration could do whatever. But in this day and age, things are just getting so litigious, you know, especially in federal court up in Virginia, that has determined that we can't do it. So we've got to give our school districts the foundation, a legislative foundation, of which they can make policies and rules where they can protect our young girls in girl spaces, right?
Yeah. And this is something that we wanted to try before, but we had court cases.
Yeah.
You know, ADF was challenging some of this stuff, mm-hmm. and we needed some rulings on it. You know, Tommy Pope's had this bill for many sessions,
yeah.
not just this one. And there's some changes to it. And I'm sure that with this, I mean, you know, one of the big things that I was unaware of before that I think will make a big difference is the fact that it includes overnight field trips.
Yes.
Something never thought about before.
Yep.
You know?
Let me just hit some high levels just because I know there's a lot of this going on around the country, these types of like state legislation. Let me tell the two listeners what this one does. What this bill does is it enacts a new Article 5 in Chapter 23, Title 59. It applies to public school districts and public higher education institutions. It defines sex strictly as biological male or female, and that's at birth, right? It doesn't allow you to go back and change it when they're 12. It requires all of these multi-occupancy restrooms and changing facilities in the schools and colleges for one sex. So it's either boys, male or female, right? You can't have both. It bars any person from entering a sex-designated restroom or changing facility unless they are a member of that sex, obviously. And also, that's why I wanted to pick up the overnight lodging. No student can be required to share sleeping quarters or multi-occupancy restrooms with a member of the opposite sex unless they're close immediate family. So
now, the one problem I do have with that is I don't like it just being public schools. Mm-hmm. The issue I see is not a issue of we're directing school policy, but it's more of an issue of this is protecting children. This should be across the board, not just public schools. This should be private. This should be all the above. This should just be law.
Yeah. You and I agree there. I think you're going the other side of that argument would be private schools, public, you know, us getting into telling private schools what they can or cannot do. Why does it stop at
whenever?
And I'm not saying I agree with that argument. I'm just saying that's what we would. That's the pushback we're going to hear. Well, and again, that's a lively debate. And we should have it, right? I mean, I agree. I think it's a fundamental issue.
I mean, we tell parents they can't transition their kid.
Yeah.
So there shouldn't be anyone that's transitioned going into these bathrooms.
I agree.
So why does it need to be public, private? It should just be whatever your biological sex is. That's what restroom that you use.
Yeah. I think it's more of that's probably for a legal scholar to talk about privacy rights of private institutions.
Yeah.
So,
just put a third leg on the men's restroom, and then that way there's never a question. You can remove the word man.
Hey, you know, when we get to session, January 12th, 13th? God, that's right around the corner, man. We can talk to the legal scholars of Robbie Robbins and Cody Mitchell.
Yes, that's true. Well, I'm looking forward to that bill going through your committee, so you'll have a lot to say on it, like man. It's been assigned to you.
Oh, man, I don't know if that one is or not. I have the parental rights one.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
So I have the parental rights one.
That's
in education and in, you know, in medicine.
I was mixing the two up. My fault.
So I am thinking that is probably going to go to
education if it's student.
So
it's got the word student in it, I would imagine.
Yeah, yeah. So that'll be Chairlady Erickson's work to do. So
she always has the big ones.
Yeah, that's right. All right, well, that concludes round two, man. Yeah.
The Doomsday Prepper Bill.
All right.
This one might be my favorite. So, and, you know, last year I would say the Doomsday Prepper Bill.
Yeah.
I don't know if you call it the Doomsday, but the scare bill was the chemtrails, right? That was the big one that was topic and, you know, there's still lots of debate about that. But this year.
Is there?
Yeah. There's lots of states are passing it.
Yeah, but
it's kind of like one of the things like, well, if it ain't happening, then it ain't happening.
And
but
again,
if it ain't worth my time even arguing against it. Like whatever.
We're gonna draw the ire of our producers here, but let's talk about chemtrails for just a quick second because
I mean we're talking doomsday, so we might as well.
I was in
DC, we got blasted by chemtrails. That's the reason I sound like this right now. It has nothing to do with that cigar bar or the bourbon or any of that stuff.
This whole idea of chemtrails, and you know, I know we have fun with it and look, if there's science behind it, if there's proof behind it, you know, let's see the receipts. Let's talk about it, right? But for folks who
it's hard to trust the science whenever we were just told
to not trust
5 years ago to trust the science, and they were all lying to us.
And so I just have a hard time believing that there is a shadowy group, either depending on which Twitter person you follow. But if you believe
stop following Candace Owens.
If you believe in chemtrails, so there's a shadowy organization, either military driven or government driven, that is spraying chemtrails and particles in the air to either manipulate weather or control the population and kill us. And I'm just like, wait a minute, President Trump is the commander in chief. So you really mean to tell me that our president is signing off on military operations or deep state operations, dropping pollutants? You know, I just, come on.
But what does Bobby Kennedy say?
Well, come
sorry,
on.
I tried to
do it. And for these efforts, and again, I think there's several southern states that are doing it, that are passing legislation that bars chemtrails.
It's mainly the weather manipulation stuff.
Again,
and there's records showing that.
Though. Okay, so we should enact state legislation, saying that rape by an alien is a felony, and we should make it punishable by death.
All right,
because
kill all
if
aliens.
We're gonna make up things that is bad, okay, let's just be arbitrary and silly, and do that one too. And I'm just saying.
I mean, if DeSantis does it, it will be a bill. Just saying.
It's silliness. And guys, look, I get the pandering, but I'm not doing that. I am not going to pander to you and all of your paranoid aluminum hat black helicopter stuff. I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Look, chemtrails, look.
I also ain't going to spend 30 minutes arguing about it on the floor.
Or on a podcast. All yeah. Right, so next, what you got?
The SC Resource Independence Act, which is 4692. I believe that's Jermaine Johnson's bill.
Okay.
Right? So it wants South Carolina to produce 25% of all of its essential resources, food, energy, and fuel, by the year 2036.
Wow.
Sounds great. Look, I'm South Carolina first.
It's aggressive.
I agree.
Bold.
I agree with that with Jermaine. South Carolina first. I'm Rock Hill before I'm South Carolina,
yeah, right?
I'm Lake Wiley before I'm South Carolina.
2036.
That'd be 10 years.
Okay.
So basically, it's a legislative zombie apocalypse plan. It sounds great on paper. I mean, everyone wants resilience.
Yeah.
Right? So you can't argue with that. But are we going to grow our own coffee?
Is it reasonable?
You know? Is it reasonable?
Jermaine, we got to have coffee, bro.
Are you gonna approve?
We need
more?
To have surpluses of coffee.
Are you allowing drilling rigs off of Myrtle Beach now, so we can get our own fuel?
Yeah, right.
You know, we need those things.
You know, this is going to be a good conversation for us to have with Jermaine when we get back. You know, he's right down the hall from us.
Oh, I bought a Wu-Tang Monopoly game, so we're going to be playing it. You know,
just
as long as a regular Monopoly game, so we'll have plenty of time to talk.
So. I wonder, first off, his motivation behind it, but also, can we do it, right? I mean, I've asked Ellen, can we put our farmers to where they are producing all of their fresh fruits and vegetables and products, and can our school districts be the major purchaser of said produce and vegetables and fruits and stuff? And I'm curious if that would even be sustainable. Right.
I mean, we're not farming enough, and we talked about
agree.
That
yeah.
on other podcasts or other episodes. I just don't know if it's feasible. I like the idea. I think we should all be resilient. I mean, but hell, just 5 years ago, I had to get York County to approve for us to be able to own chickens at your private residence within the county.
Right.
I mean, that little thing called home rule kind of screws us up whenever they don't want you having chickens to produce eggs.
Yeah, right. Well, and you know, if this becomes law, we're gonna have to start opening up canneries again. You know, I know that's a thing of a bygone era, but
there's a group in Lake Wiley that actually teaches canning.
Oh yeah, I think it's a great idea, and I produce enough tomatoes for myself in the summertime, but I don't produce enough to can them, and you know.
I've never grown anything out of the ground and ate it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. Just
not enough land.
Look,
huh?
I don't cook. I can't grow cereal or frozen pizza. So.
Man,
hey, cooking to begin with.
Did we talk about this before? Be better than square pizza.
Yeah.
You know.
I go Red Baron, round, thin, yeah. Crispy ever since Gary Brewer put me onto that daggum pizza.
Yeah, right.
My wife hates me now because I'm on those instead of the square ones.
Hey, those are good.
They're a little bit more expensive than the square ones. She's like, can't you go back to that 99-cent budget?
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah. So, House Bill 4692 by our colleague Jermaine Johnson. It's being dubbed the South Carolina Resource Independence Act. It says South Carolina's got to produce 25% of all its own essential resources, food, energy, and fuel by 2036.
The big question is fuel. I really don't see us being able to do it.
And is it attainable? Is it reasonably to think that we can do all this in 10 years?
And which 25% survives the zombie apocalypse? That's what I'm wondering. Is it only those that can afford to get it from South Carolina?
So
like, where are we doing?
Yeah, that's winter. Definitely a close runner-up, I know, was we had an EMP bill.
Yes.
And again, it's not that hardening our infrastructure.
It's just the thinking of the doomsday issue.
Yeah, and it's also, we've got to prepare for it financially, because it, you talk about hardening infrastructure, electric grids, and those types of things, folks, that's an expensive undertaking.
And we certainly need something like that, and I think that really should be where things such as Space Force come into play, you know? But we're not far off with what we're looking at and the amount of data that we're having. Like, as we are growing in this new revolution, we're one MP away from that really severely affecting us. And I know a lot of people disagree with that. Look, I got an EMP surge protector on my car, so that way my electronics don't get fried up.
All right,
I'm all for it. I could build an EMP gun, I would, because if the AI robots are going to take over, that's what we need to shoot those little bastards.
Hey, look, who's the prepper now?
Look, but I ain't growing my own food. I'm going to rob a food line if we come to that. Stack up on some Red Baron.
All right.
Hey, Red Baron, we need sponsors.
All right, round four.
Yep. I want to love you.
That's right, baby. All right, we call this the palate cleanser. Sort
this
of the
is
feel
the
good, you know, folks. Politics can be divisive, but it's not this one, right?
Right.
House Bill.
This is the good bill
that makes
you feel good.
That's right. So House Bill 4610, the I Love You Bill.
Yes.
By our colleague Jay Moore, it designates the I Love You hand sign from the American Sign Language as the official state symbol of South Carolina.
Remember, you have to have the thumb out. If you don't, you're a devil worshiper.
Yeah. And so we've seen this in Columbia. There is the I love you.
I had it on my lapel whenever we passed Gavin's Law.
Yeah, because we had the school.
Yep. Deaf and the blind. I love it. It's one of the lapel pins that I kept that I'll throw on once in a while.
That's right. And so, you know, this is just a great idea. I don't know if it'll pass. Who knows? But who's going to vote against I love you being part of our state symbol? Governor can use it, put it in state agencies, incorporate it around the state.
I'd love to see the I love you on a South Carolina flag or you know, on a tag.
Right. License
Just
plate.
Love it. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. And this, you know, we wanted to bring this up too because my son, Ben, you know, he's nonverbal. I understand what he's saying most of the time, and folks who've been around him understand what he's saying. But we do sign, especially when he's going to school, when my wife's taking our boys to school Monday through Friday, and I'm here, I'm seeing them out the door as well, and he always rolls the window down. We share sort of goodbyes, and that's what we do. We touch hands and to the I love you.
Love that.
Yeah, symbol. So
yeah, I mean, it's
this is one of our sort of, we think it's going to be a fan favorite.
Yeah.
This would be a good one. I hope that this would get taken up pretty quick.
After all the arguing over judges and bathrooms you know, whatever else we got coming up, because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's right.
But this is one, I mean, who the hell's going to argue with it?
I know. So kudos to Jay Moore
Good other luck. Than the people saying, why aren't y'all doing other stuff?
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, there's nothing. I mean, come on, man. What's more important than not telling folks you love them?
And, right. And I think it's a good representation of South Carolinians. Not all you New Yorkans that keep coming down here. But the South Carolinians, it definitely yeah. is. I know it's New Yorkers, but yeah, ooh. I had to say Yuns just for y'all. So the Ohioans can actually understand what I'm talking about.
The Yuns. Yeah, yeah. So speaking of, you know, sorry, microphone got away from me. You and I were talking about this, and I did pre-file.
Uh-oh.
Raising the stakes or the qualifications for...
the Yankee tax?
Yeah, baby. So if you want to run for office, you've got to live in the state.
Can we make it retroactive for TGK? Just ask him for it.
I'm not making it retroactive because you know how folks get all touchy thinking that a certain law is about, you know, about them. But anyway.
Yeah, like the president's AI moratorium.
Yeah, right. Raise the qualifications. So if you want to run for state office in the General Assembly, so Senator of the House, you've got to have lived in South Carolina for 10 years. If you want to run for a Senate seat.
Been a citizen for 10 years in South Carolina.
That's right. And so if you want to run for the House or the Senate, you have got to be in that district for 2 years.
Are you calling it the ends bill?
Of when you file.
I'm just curious. It seems like I know someone.
No.
I can't think of the name, but it's in there somewhere that just would, I mean, it would just.
No, it's more of South Carolina right first. There.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Look.
Carolina first, eh?
Look, we welcome all folks, but. You know, if you want to be here, you have to assimilate and get to know South Carolina, not just, you know, the physical, the geography, but also the people and the culture and how we do things. And we've got a way of doing things.
Just don't come in talking like Henry and act like you've been here your whole life.
So
go to a Waffle House, dang it.
Yeah. So I did get that one pre-filed. And you want to touch a little bit on anything that you've pre-filed? I know you got some social media stuff
yeah,
that you talked about.
Yeah, and I didn't. I've got it up on my notes here, but.
And that's right.
I'll tell you, the big one, the bill number is unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm going to say that it is the.
Is it 4-6? 4-6-6-6.
4-6-6-6. And it's the one that I actually think, if you ask me between all of my bills, is probably one of my favorites. It's one of the ones that I think will make the biggest difference. It is the Web 3.0 approach. If I can get down to the notes here, make sure I'm not.
And I put you on the spot. This is the Digital Choice Act, right?
Yes. So it passed in Utah, Digital Choice Act. So it passed by Rep. Doug Fiafia, which has become a friend of mine. He is a former YouTube programmer that joined the legislature. This was his first bill. So he come in as an engineer brain.
Oh, nice.
And
so he knows it.
So he knows it. You're not arguing with him as a techie.
Yeah.
And he,
or you are, but you're going to go... I mean, you're going to get a...
Right. So, I mean, basically, it gives you social media freedom and data portability. So, the users have control over their media data and mandating data portability with the companies and deletion rights. So, we just had the big problem with 23andMe.
Right.
You know, getting sold. You should have the right to delete your data and say, I don't want that stuff going to China.
Yep.
You should, anytime that you leave a social media company, you should say, I want all of my data deleted. Not all of them work that way, and there's nothing in law to force that. But it will break big tech's lock-in and foster a more open internet for people to be able to move. So it enables communication between different social media platforms, similar to how email works across providers.
Right.
So it would work the same way. So your information... could transfer that way. And the goal of the entire bill is to empower the individuals, reduce big tech dominance, and create a fair digital ecosystem. So
man,
I think Utah's the only one that's passed it. That is the only pushback I've heard is the CCIA said that there are privacy concerns with a third party in place.
Right.
If there's a problem with a third party, there should also be problems with each one of these social media companies.
Right. And man, it because the internet and technology is so difficult. It's always so innovative. Isn't that just the challenge, right, of government and sort of laws trying to stay up with it? Because technology, business is always innovating. It's always cutting edge stuff. And, you know, legislation and laws always are going to be trailing 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
You know?
There's another one that I've pushed too, which is the Stop Harm from Addictive Social Media.
Yeah.
You know, we met with Tanya Shelnut with ADF.
Yep.
And we were talking about App Store accountability. ADF has vetted this bill to uphold in court. Now, I'm not filing it in place of App Store accountability.
Right.
I will probably adopt some of its features in App Store accountability or some of the app. I don't know if I want to mess with their bill because I know theirs upholds a court decision.
Oh, gotcha.
You know, so it's always difficult to mess with.
Yeah, correct.
A company like ADF that challenges the Supreme Court on trying to mess and muck around with their bills.
Yeah, right. Well, and it's got a legal threshold that's already been tested through courts in other states. So.
Yeah. I mean, those are the two big ones that are new.
Yeah.
I would love to, at minimum, have a hearing or if not a floor debate,
just
to at least get out of the House. I know getting it through the Senate would be a reach in this short time period.
Yeah.
But I would like to make it an easier lift for next session. You know, Lord willing, the people bring me back and not, you know, take everything I say on this podcast so seriously.
Well, I know we're just trying to wrap stuff up talking about pre-filed legislation. House Bill 4707 is that you should co-sponsor.
A lot better number.
Is yeah, I know, right? Is where you got to live in the state for 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
And in your district for two.
Hey, Siri, set a reminder to sign on to Bill 4707. I think it's called the ENDS Act.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not. But also, I'm going to throw out a couple bill numbers, and these are all regarding PBM reform. House Bill 4790, 4791, 4792, 4793, 4794, and 4795.
Hey, you PBM companies, I hadn't co-signed onto it, so I'm still taking donations.
Look, go check all those out. That's 5 or 6 bills that are just bringing more accountability, transparency to PBMs.
Yeah.
It's empowering patients and physicians to direct more of their healthcare choices, especially when it comes to the drugs and what pharmacies they can go to. And then also, it's going to penalize folks who are bad actors, right? Folks who are using unfair business practices to steer your businesses to their pharmacies that they own, that's
common sense.
It's monopolistic. I don't know how this vertical integration even happened, except for maybe some corporate capture of some agencies on a federal level. That's a whole.
Just spent a little time in D.C. It all comes
right.
Relevant very quickly.
So, man, that wraps up 2025, man.
2025.
I know.
So the busiest year of my life, I think.
Right.
It has been.
I know, right? 4 jobs and not to mention a family.
I don't get paid but for one of them.
I know, right? So we didn't even talk about that. Maybe we can talk about that when we get into Columbia. So.
Yes, exactly. Thank you all so much for going through 2025 with us.
Yeah.
As we are doing more analytics, we're liking to see who's following. We know more of you listen while it's in session. So for those of you who stick with us during the off season, thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Still looking for more sponsors.
Yep.
Visit us on pintsandpolitics.show. Give us likes, give us subscribes.
Yeah.
All of that helps.
And again,
that way we can get our message out to more people. So
thank you to Tacoma Distributing.
Yes.
For always being supportive, not just of us, but the show. We've enjoyed the tasty beverages over the last 73 episodes. Over like what, 2.5 years?
I just realized we didn't even go into Sycamore.
And no, we can handle that
next year. We got to talk about.
But hey, thanks for listening for the two y'all and the plus members or the folks who have been listening for us for this year. Thank you. Have a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
I wanna love you.
That's right, baby.